is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. Now, forgive me, we had a little departure from the All Bahamian playlist, but every once in a while, we got to reach out to our brethren across the waters and say, give us a little something to play. And that song, Say a Little Prayer for You, is by Diana King, our Jamaican sistren that hit the world stage. Boy, looky, I was still just a little churin when that song came out. It was a beautiful, beautiful rendition of Say a Little Prayer for You. Well, good morning. It is Tuesday, the 22nd of February, 2022. And that means you're on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Now, today is not just Tuesday, it's a Tuesday. Imagine that, the 22nd of the second month of the 2022nd year of our Lord. Ah, boy. If y'all play in any numbers today, remember to make a small donation to one of your civil society organizations in your community or to a church,
amen,
a children's home, or to a farmer. On that note, I don't know if y'all noticed this morning on my way to the station, there was a helicopter moving all over the east Nassau City, like right on the eastern edge of Nassau City. Don't mind that helicopter. That's my helicopter. I have them out there looking for fruit. I looking for June plum. I looking for tamarind. Why ain't nobody talking about tamarind? It's February, people, tamarind on the trees.
I got plenty on my tree, but a couple of weeks ago.
We could save that, right, Mark. That's a different conversation between me and you and your tree. Not all the beautiful people out there in the Bahamas. But I don't see any tamarind on the road. I don't see any tamarind on the ground. I don't see Rastaman picking tamarind. I don't see fresh tamarind sauce or tamarind balls in the market yet. So I had to put my helicopter up there to see what was happening. I also looking for June plum. I looking for the last of the small juju season. And we should be right in the peak of the big juju season. That is juju for pawking. Ah, boy, there's a lot to talk about this morning. But as you know, it's Tuesday, which means it's a World News Tuesday. And I have with me my guest co-host, Mr. Mark Palmer, this morning.
Good morning, everyone.
And in the Zoom room, I have a special guest joining us from Barbados/Jump. And bring her on in a moment. Just a little bit of housekeeping to get through. Not a lot, just a little bit. Drivers may notice that someone has also spilled cement on the roadway just immediately west of the Nassau sorry, the Shirley Street and Mackey Street intersection. I could be honest with you, it looked like the same truck, the cement dry up the same way in the road. I hope that we have CCTV at that intersection so that we can quickly and timelessly, good morning, Inland Department of Inland Revenue, so we could timelessly have that repaired and the road returned to its normal state. That's a hazard right there, and it's going to become a particular hazard because the people who like to turn right on red from Mackey Street in the westbound lane, they're going to be upset that they can't because the cars that actually do have the right-of-way will be trying to avoid those lumps of cement in the road and entering the intersection in the northernmost lane. Dear police, Royal Bahamas Police Force, please, just go have lunch there. Go park up and have lunch there. You don't even have to do anything. I just want you to witness it. Also, if you notice in today's, there is a story that I think everybody needs to read. The main fold, top, life in a tent. The subcaption on Abaco, many struggle to get by more than 2 years after Dorian. I spent the last year and a half easily lambasting, crying on, sudging on radio, begging politicians to acknowledge and exercise their professional duty of care towards the residents and former residents of Abaco. This matter is more troubling than every matter that we have had. This is more troubling than what's going on at the end of Frank Watson Boulevard. This is more troubling than how the whole Oban file could disappear. It's more troubling than how a prime minister could call a snap election, leaving citizens in the dark, in the midst of a process that required the state to come back to the people through parliament at the end of the state of emergency and declare what it is that transpired and happened during their tenure. This is even worse than that. This is worse than the politicians that continue to cry and claim that it is a travesty. It should be illegal to suggest that they take a pay cut, even for lack of performance. It's more troubling than that. We all should be ashamed. Every time one of these stories pops up, we all should be ashamed. We refuse to acknowledge the lives of those who are lost because we don't have to. Because they can't sit up and look in our face and force us to do nothing. See, that's how it operates in the gang culture, right? We refuse to even create a proper missing persons, casualties, fatalities list for Dorian. We refuse. And those people dead? They dead. And now the state is showing us that it does not have the temerity to look into the faces of those that survived. Our systems are failing, people. Our systems are failing. But that ain't what I come here to talk about today. I come to talk about something different. So we're at the 10:19 mark. I'm going to read these texts, and then we're going to transition into the subject matter for this morning. And the title is Barbados, Religion and the New Republic. And I saw an interesting story coming out of Barbados. I think we could talk about it because there are a lot of lessons to learn for us in the Bahamas. But let me read these texts first, and then we're going to go to a break and we're going to get into that segment of the show. First text, what do you do if there's no access to your land other than through your neighbor's property? Wow. Well, I don't know. I got to find that out. Hopefully I'll be lucky enough to own land on this little plantation. But there must be an answer. There has to be an answer to that question. There's definitely an answer. To the text, I would suggest the place where you can start is the Eugene DePuch Legal Aid Clinic. So the Eugene DePuch Law School has a legal aid clinic. You can, should be able to go online and find the number. If not, go down to Rosetta Street at the old Winn-Dixie building, the old City Market building there where the new Department of Labor offices are. There's also an office for the Eugene DePuch Legal Counsel, I think it is, and they can give you more information. Another text, Aaron. I told you and your guests that Putin wants war, but you guys think only elites know things. I followed Putin for 30 years, so I know him. Listen to small people. First of all, we are small people. Like, you carrying on like these big people ignoring you. Second of all, everybody knows that Putin wants war. But it's not like he wants war. That's not what it is. Putin operates in war culture, right? It's separate, that's separate from wanting war. That's knowing that war is inevitable in the dynamic that you awaken in, and it's a matter of positioning yourself best, right? To come out best at the end of that war. The second thing is this. I read that that those territories that decided to break away broke away after a formal vote. Like, there was a vote, there was a process of democracy that led those territories to breaking away. Now, what I will say, Texter, is I have not read up sufficiently to verify whether that is the truth or not. I wasn't able to get to Ukraine this weekend to go check it out myself. I have to rely on primarily Western media to make these assessments. But I think that this is far, like I said earlier, this is far more complicated than we are being led to believe by traditional media. But I wouldn't say that Putin wants war. I would say that Putin is a warlord because his style of governance, his political ideology suggests that war is imminent if we're not already in it. And in fact, I think a lot of us miss the fact that there's been war been happening. Proxy war, economic war, all kinds of different wars. They've been taking, in fact, the Bahamas, you could rightly describe the Bahamas as being in the midst of a proxy war because of the importance of our geolocation, right? Of our location. Another text, Ms. Green, how come the agriculture officer in charge here in Exuma don't have a government vehicle to carry out the work? Oh, that's because somebody just hasn't put it in on the boat yet. There's plenty of government vehicle around here running. In fact, U.S. road traffic, we can confiscate the red plates we see turning right on red. Send them to Exuma. The texter says the woman is renting car to do the work. Please tell the minister responsible for agriculture and the representative for Exuma to fix that. This woman loves her job. She does very well at it, and the minister must do better for her and all of the civil servants that they supervise. Another text, let me tell you a Texter, you can't just say that like that. I'd like to see the feasibility requirements report they did for the purchase of those igloos for a tropical climate. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you a secret. There are thousands of local and foreign businessmen who see the Caribbean as a get-rich-quick dumping ground. Lots of people to bribe. Who cares if it works and who's going to penalize you anyway? Boy, they call that plantation model economics. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right, Texter. Thank you very, very much. Texter says, Ms. Green, I will make you Minister of Roads. Now, the texter said, Misters of Roads, you know. I transcribed that texter. Let me tell you all a quick story before we transition. So I'm on radio now, and my partner said to me one day, I'm going to need you to stop shouting in this car because you make money with your voice. And she says she's going to order me a megaphone. So I'm waiting for the megaphone to come. I ain't said what I could do with it yet, but I'm waiting for the megaphone to come. I was hoping it would come in time for Valentine's Day because I had a whole plan to catch me a man. But it was too late. So I'm having a discussion with another friend, and we're just talking about sort of young people in the public space and reminding young people that they have to be very careful what they put in the public space because they cannot take it back at all. And you may be 15 now and don't care about anything, but you may be 35 with three children and wanting to be prime minister of the Bahamas, and that may come back to haunt you. And so I was saying to my friend to tell her friend that big old Erin Green getting a megaphone, but can't use it because, you know, even though there's no law saying she can't use a megaphone, there's just certain things she can't do in the public space, right? And then guess what happened? The megaphone didn't make it. It disappeared. It just didn't come to the Bahamas. And so even the universe knew. Even the universe said, look here, let me help Erin moderate her behavior. Sometimes people find it hard to moderate their behavior, even when they know how to do what they know they ought to do. I can help her out. And whether, you know, I don't know, maybe it was, you know, ancestor and customs. The same person who wouldn't let me get my camel out of customs is the same person who wouldn't let me get my megaphone out of customs, Mark. Producer, let's go to a break. And then when we come back from that break, we're going to get into our topic. Dear Texter, please note that the same two buses that we contacted the police traffic division about, the drivers are driving illegally on the road. Thank you, Texter. So I got a text yesterday, and I didn't read the license plate numbers because I wasn't sure the status of, you know, or the veracity of the information. But the people reported it to road traffic, and that's the... Thank you, Texter. Producer, let's go to that break. Awesome. You guys, stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Erin Green, Mark Palmer, and my guest, Taitu Heron. We'll be right back.
Junior just showed me Bala Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good for nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bala hair. You say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior phone?
Oh, he there because the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police want to find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas so you can call and nobody knows you. Call directly to Miami and give the issue without giving your name or anything about you. I tried the other day and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick round the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Like what you're hearing on the show? Want to support the conversation? Sponsor On the Clock today. Call Janet Lees at 302-2304. That's 302-2304. Be the solution. Sponsor On the Clock with Erin Green, where she dissects, we discuss, and you decide.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You are on the clock with Erin Green on this World News Tuesday with Mark Palmer and my guest Taitu Heron. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
How you do?
I'm very well, thank you.
All right. Good to have you back with me. Sorry it took us so long. Let me introduce my guest Taitu. Good morning, Taitu.
Good morning.
How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm good on this wonderful Tuesday. Thanks for having me.
Taitu is a development specialist, human rights advocate, and performance poet. She's also the head of the Women and Development Unit at UE Open Campus. She is a Caribbean sistren And I want to say a warrior woman, and most of all, she is my mango supply in the Caribbean. Let me down ever. When I've come to the Caribbean, she always have a mango for me. Good morning.
Good morning. Blessed love.
Blessed love. So I was searching for a topic for today's show on the weekend, and I saw this article that said, the title was Religious Community Has Varying Views Over Education Ministry's Instruction to Omit Assembly, right? And I saw a notice from, I think, the Ministry of Education in Barbados saying that the schools would no longer have general assemblies when students, in the morning, when students return to face-to-face classes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, wow, let's delve into this. And then I realized that people were concerned, generally concerned, that Mia Motley and her government are trying to remove religion from schools, right? And so I just want to read for the audience, give the audience a bit of context. If we remember, the title of the segment is Barbados, Religion and the New Republic. Barbados became a republic at midnight on its 55th anniversary last year. Yes.
So we started December as a new republic.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And a part of that process, they created the Charter of Barbados. And in the Charter of Barbados, the government proposed to replace the word God with the word creator. And so when the Ministry of Education announced that they were no longer going to have general assemblies, in fact, they did so. I'm going to read directly from this article. If so, it's to follow the conversation. The first article we're going to read from is Religious Community Has Varying Views Over Education Ministry's Instruction to Omit Assembly. And that's in Barbados Today, an online publication. And it says, the local religious community is divided on a new directive that there be no general assembly of students. Hold school prayers, year group prayers, or house prayers when face-to-face teaching resumes on Monday, which would have been yesterday. The new rule was in a circular or a memo sent out to principals. And it states that instead of assemblies and prayers, where possible, students should be allowed to engage in mindfulness sessions in their classrooms while observing COVID-19 protocols. And mindfulness sessions, if I wrote it down somewhere what it is, according to experts, mindfulness-based stress reduction, or MBSR, is secular intensive mindfulness training to assist people with stress, anxiety, depression, and pain. And so after the ministry announced, well, they didn't even announce it, right? They sent out a memo that was sort of leaked to the public that they were going to have this transition in how they started the school day. The chief education officer, Dr. Ramona Archer Bradshaw, said that the Ministry of Education is not taking God out of the schools. They wanted to make it completely clear that the memo only outlined how the new assemblies would operate. And she said, quote, we said students would come into the classroom and we will interact with them because many of them have suffered loss. We understand that. So we want to hear from them and be able to guide them accordingly to talk about love, compassion, and having understanding for the situation. And so essentially, I think that's what's happening in Barbados. But you are on the ground in Barbados. Tell us, from your perspective, what's happening? Is the Ministry of Education trying to remove religion and prayer from Barbados schools?
No. No, I think that response from some of the church leaders is a bit exaggerated. Mm-hmm. And I know that there is also concerns with the idea of mindfulness. But the idea of mindfulness also includes prayer if a student wants to pray. But how it is being perceived or how it's being promoted is seeing mindfulness as a type of meditation where you become aware of your feelings in the moment. And it involves breathing methods. As you had mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. relaxing the body and the mind and reducing stress. So the response is a bit exaggerated. It's been really coming mostly from the head of some churches or the head of some religious groups.
Right. I was going to say, what I found is that the same paper, Barbados Today, spoke to a number of religious leaders in Barbados, the secretary of the Muslim Association of Barbados, the Barbados mm-hmm. Evangelical Association, the Pentecostal Assemblies of the West Indies, and the Barbados Christian Council. And all of them said, look, while we're not really familiar with what they mean by mindfulness, we don't feel that this is an attempt to remove God or religion from schools.
No, it's not. I think, to be fair to the Ministry of Education, they have to respond to how they deal with social distancing and the grouping of children in numbers. So to me, this was one of the response. This was one of the ways in which they would respond. So instead of a general assembly, it would be mindfulness. And it's not necessarily a bad outcome because it then allows children to develop their own internal tools to manage stress rather than have it mediated in a religious.
Right.
So if you have a religious affiliation, you can practice mindfulness on your own in your class. If you do not, then you equally have the freedom to practice mindfulness as a form of meditation. So I think it is really a call for the churches who are concerned to figure out how they respond But it's definitely not this notion of removing religion from schools or anything like that. It is really more a situation of shifting the privilege that the church has always had. And even though in this particular case, I think this is more a public health response that has impacted General Assembly, which is religiously directed. So the two, in a sense, have been muddled.
Mm-hmm.
But this is definitely not an example of that. And I don't think persons, from what I've been seeing on social media and hearing on the radio, that persons are overly concerned that it's being taken over, because in other ways it certainly is. There is still prayer. For instance, we saw, you know, when school started back yesterday, some children in class were still praying, you mm-hmm. know, to start off. And if it was any idea of removing religion from schools, then half of the schools in Barbados would close, because most of the schools in Barbados have some form of religious affiliation. And there has been no indication or interest that that is the direction that the government is going. So I think it's a bit of fear-mongering in some ways, because it is also being seen from the previous step that was made last year with the charter.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we can get to that in a minute.
It sounds like a storm in a teacup, you know.
Yes, definitely, Mark.
I mean, I think it's a fear. I mean, I have a lot of Christian friends who are very fearful of, you know, pluralism, of, you know, these competing ideas, and they feel it's chipping away at their authority and their power that they used to have. And it's interesting when they say, well, we don't know what the term means. All you have to do is Google it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually, you know, there's a lot of research. Schools that are using it in the United States have had great results with kids. It's a way of reducing stress, you know, reduces heart rate, immunity, and gives them better sleep as well. So some very good reasons for having it. But there's this kind of fear that anything imported, you know, like yoga, this is nothing like yoga, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This is a proven technique to help, you know, help stress and suffering in these times. So I think it is a little bit of storm in a teacup.
And I would say to religious groups or specifically Christian groups that feel that mindfulness is an attempt to edge them out of these spaces, that mindfulness is a tool that you should be using to support the development of your parishioners and congregation mm-hmm. members. I see in interjecting mindfulness into a school space as also helping kids understand other people's mm-hmm. faith, how to ensure that they can worship whatever they believe safely. And surely that's a positive for mm-hmm. Christians who feel that they are in some way being persecuted. You know, we're teaching people how to respect each other's faith, whether we agree or not. Absolutely. But don't mind me, guys, because I have 1,000 questions. I was just thinking, you know, I have a friend. I wanted to tell my friend, you know, I may not believe in God, but she believes in me. So, you know, I don't really stress about it that much. Taitu, in both Barbados and I guess in Jamaica as well, do you find that schools are accommodating young people? Schools are creating or protecting spaces and creating events and curating events to accommodate different religious beliefs, particularly in a country like Jamaica with a population of Rastafarian students?
No.
There you go.
No,
they're not.
It's always been a struggle, an individual struggle based on a family's commitment. I also grew up Rastafarian, mm-hmm. and I definitely knew that it was my mother's insistence that I not go to assembly, why I was able to be excluded and go to the classroom and read or practice mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And as we have seen, I've seen examples in the more recent years of Rastafarian students being asked to cut their locks to go back to school. There was even a case that had gone to court, you know. So it's definitely not something that is easily accommodated. And I think that also relates to the fact that a lot of the schools are managed and governed by churches. So it's problematic, even though it's in the Constitution that says you know you should have practice to, you know, the freedom to practice your religion freely. It's not necessarily at the practical level or at the level of respecting the fact that there are different paths to the Creator or God, if you want to call it God. My preference is Creator myself. So it is definitely problematic. And I think persons' own individual religious beliefs and the leadership or the privilege that they may have as a religious authority often impedes the way in which they are to involve students or treat students. You know, so again, you know, it's adults with their imposing beliefs, unfortunately, treating children in a way that is really quite unfair. It has shifted a little bit, for instance, in Barbados, because the Muslim community here are quite vocal and they're advocates as well, and the Rastafarian community to a lesser extent. So they have organized and they've pushed for certain things. And I do know that both in female students who wish to wear the hijab and longer, having the uniform tunic much longer below the knees and so on, that's allowed.
Yeah.
Without any fuss. This is not to say that it's not, they don't get resistance or they don't get discrimination or they're not bullied. You know, we know that that occurs, but I do know that really, you know, friendships are formed across religious faiths between students, among students, you know, among teachers and so on. Mm-hmm. So I think it's definitely on the improvement side of things in both countries, but I would say at the level of structural discrimination at the policy level, it is still problematic.
Absolutely. Just a couple of points I want to make here. You know, when you talk about students of different faiths, they find ways to make bonds. And I just think, because it don't matter whether you're Christian or Rasta, you both have a mother that want to make sure that you do your homework so you could go to church on time, right? Like that is the thing that is common between all of us. the respect that we have is, and then I wanted to ask, are there any student advocacy groups in Barbados or Jamaica? Because we don't have any here, although we do have a youth advocate, at least one youth advocate here.
I would say it's more youth advocacy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But not student advocacy.
Not student advocacy, no. More youth advocacy.
All right. Another point I wanted to make is the point that you made about the engagement of the Muslim and Rastafarian communities in Barbados. I noted that in the article that I read, it was the secretary to the Muslim Association that said, well, you know, maybe what I need to do is reach out to my interfaith brethren, you know, leaders, and we need to collectively go to the ministry and ask them what all this mindfulness thing is about. And, you know, initially I thought, well, this is great, right? That you have this sort of interfaith movement where leaders are not afraid to engage each other. But then I thought, wait, is the religious community in Barbados, are they now joining together, right? Like the Transformers, are they joining together to then remains deeply entrenched in Bayesian, Barbadian law, culture, and society, regardless of their different faiths? Just the concept of religion needs to remain?
No, not in that way. I think some of the Christian groups are coming together to organize to retain moral privilege, or, you know, mm-hmm. The Muslim group, I could be wrong, but the sense that I do get is that they are taking advantage of the spaces that are opening up for Barbados to become more religiously and spiritually inclusive.
Yes.
And they're organizing themselves accordingly to you know, hold space and to become more productive in the affairs of the country in a political way. So, for instance, we have a young senator in the Barbados government now who is Muslim, and it's the first on many levels. First, he's Muslim, and he's also the youngest senator. The push Faran groups and Muslims to be able to have headgear and take part and take the official part. Official ID for their passports was something that was promoted by the Barbados Association of Muslim Ladies. Wow. And then the Rastafarian organization as well. So it's at that level. So they are definitely taking advantage of the discourse of inclusion that has been opening up in the country. Mm-hmm. So it's not in that regard at all. I don't think so. That's not what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
The Christian groups are the ones that are terrified. So they're the ones that are making efforts to work together across denominations.
Yes.
But I don't know if this space for now, or even ask another question, but I think we do need to think about what's behind the fear in terms of why they're responding this way. Mm-hmm. And I do see it as fear. You know, they see it as, and they're resisting the change that's coming. They're resisting the spaces that are opening up because then the church voices, particularly church leaders of the Anglican faith, of the Episcopalian churches, they have had moral authority in a lot of ways. So that privilege is being shifted, is under question. I think to me, that is where the fear comes up, and they haven't quite found their footing in terms of where they will locate their power, their social power. And that is something that is work that they themselves will have to do, because that's definitely not the direction of the government. And it's also not the direction of a younger generation of Barbadians. I had the fortune to participate in a discussion last year around the time that the charter came up on for discussion and the decision by the government to change the name from God to Creator.
Yes.
And that was the objective of the Zoom discussion was literally about that. And the overwhelming majority, their utterances were rooted in fear. Mm-hmm.
There is clearly.
Similarly, the overwhelming majority with it.
Yeah.
It's not something that younger generation, younger Barbadians are overwhelmingly concerned about. They quite welcome the shift.
I do. I think that's changing. I mean, we had this kind of reformation when I lived in the UK years ago, you know, how that all changed and became more multicultural. But there is definitely a fear, and it goes down to a fear of Christian values. And see, we have our Constitution here was kind of an interesting document because it is a secular document. If you look at the article, which has the legal power, but as a compromise to the religious community, there was a preamble instituted which talks about Christian values, a Christian nation, spiritual values, mm-hmm. and God. And then, you know, so when you look at those, what does it mean by Christian values? And when you go back to the Bible, and you look at the writings of Paul to Galatians, he talks about Christian values as something that we would all agree with, things like love. He talks about joy, peace, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, all those things. I don't think we have any objection to that. But Christian values today, in the 21st century, they're much more conservative, mm-hmm. right-wing. And when we look at them, you know, they're at odds with a pluralistic secular society. So if we look at some of those values, for example, things like censorship of sexual content, you know, I think that there's probably not much disagreement with that. But sexual abstinence outside of marriage and abstinence-only sex education, that really, you know, that butts against kind of the data, what works, and science. And there are other things as well. Christian values, you know, that intelligent design should be taught in schools, the desirability of laws against same-sex marriage, support for laws against acceptance of homosexuality, and of course, desirability of organized school prayer. And these are the fears that these sort of Christian values are being impinged on. But I think they've gone very far away from what the original intention mm-hmm. was mm-hmm. from the writers of the Bible.
Absolutely, because God
said... Absolutely, yeah.
Sorry, I was just going to throw a joke in there. But what I'm going to do, guys, is I'm going to read these texts. We're going to go to a call and then producer, if we have a break, and then we're going to sort of close out the conversation. The first text says, no, they're not taking God out of the schools as yet. It would have to be a process. Make sure your faith is grounded and be mindful of those slippery slopes. So I'm telling you, a little bit of mindfulness can't hurt anybody.
No. But the thing is, it's not values, though, you know. I mean, I think, Mark, I would agree with you on the original idea of values, you know. It's good ethics. Mm-hmm. I don't think those values belong to Christianity alone. In its original spiritual form, you know, those are good ethics. And I think what the concern is related to the original relationship of a lot of the churches in the Caribbean, which people forget was it was one of empire, mm-hmm. you know, and those same things that you're talking about are basically forms of social control. And it's not really new insofar as the relationship between empire and the chain and the church. Sorry, yeah, empire and the church goes, you know, it existed in the Spanish Empire and the Portuguese Empire, in the British Empire, which, you know, we are descendants of, so to speak. But that historical relationship is shifting. It's still there because a lot of the churches, you know, the imperial stance, if we're going to use that language, it's hierarchical, it's patriarchal, and it really does suppress the spiritual expression of religion over things like, you know, hegemony of thought, hegemony of sexual behavior, hegemony over women's bodies, hegemony over doctrine, insistence on order. Those things are more related to an imperialist stance and an imperial relationship of church and empire, rather than it has anything to do with a Christian past, so to speak. So I think that is what is being shifted without them necessarily examining it enough, the extent to which there is need to decolonize that little bit there, you know? Yes. It's a little bit, but it's a big bit at the same time. And that privileged position is shifting, so they're getting historical. I mean, who that has social power or political power does not resist that change. You know, it's a very natural, in a sense, response. But I think if there are Episcopalian thinkers, as they should be, as church leaders should be, because they study the stuff, they study theology, they should also be mindful, let's use the word again, mm-hmm. to understand the historical relationship of church with a capital C, and the state, and recognize that, for instance, in Barbados, the hold of the Anglican Church was de-established in the 1970s under Errol Barrow. You know, so it's not new. It's just that, okay, we're now at this stage, things are moving towards a more inclusive approach. So therefore, they have to make that adjustment, you know. It is already happening. So I think they really do need to examine their own doctrines and move away from a doctrinal imperialist stance to one of ethics and to one of inclusion, which is, quite frankly, you know, it's there in certain forms of Christianity already, liberation theology, feminist theology. It's not inaccessible. It may not be an approach that some of them have taken here, but it is certainly existing in other parts of the world if one chooses to be Christian.
Absolutely. Listen, I got a caller on the line. Other caller, please call back. And I got another text I got to read. I got to get you guys back on. And possibly, Taitu, we got to bring in our colleague, Peter Wickham. We got to bring him back on because Mark and I were talking about the general election a few weeks ago with Peter and without Peter. And what's interesting is that Motley may have been like close to being the victim of a coup, right? Mm-hmm. There was an attempt to remove her from power twice. And I sense now that a part of that opposition is rooted in this sort of religious right perspective, right?
Yeah.
And so there are these links. Well, it was such a fascinating discussion to now see Atherley, who became the opposition leader, so deeply entrenched in this discussion and his great concern for the process of moving to a republic and how it was done and what may or may not be left out. But I got this text here that I got to read. It says, good morning, Aaron. Great topic. Don't call me an atheist, but I think these assemblies are huge time wasters and distractions in the schools, at least here in the Bahamas. A quick prayer and hymn is good enough over the PA system. Prayers should be done at home according to one's religious preference. How dare folks assume that we ain't pray before we leave home and need intercession?
Aha! Excellent point.
Yes.
Excellent point.
Yes. Okay, so now I throw that text out there, but I got two callers. Let's get to that caller, the first one who's been waiting forever, and then we can push in the second caller. Good morning, caller. You are on the clock.
Well, they just talking away along with you and your panel, pretty Iron Green.
Good morning, Brayman. How you doing?
I'm holding. You know, a couple of things. What's the name of your guest?
So, Mark Palmer and Taitu Heron from Barbados.
Taitu Heron. Now, let me say something first, right? Before I ask her a question. You know, some people, You speak of people that doesn't, oh Lord, the word got away from me. But anyhow, I'll get back to that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want to ask the lady from Barbados, right?
Mm-hmm.
They are establishing liberality among the children.
You mean like liberation theology?
Right.
Like the teachings of Christ.
No. Mm-hmm.
Well, give me an understanding what you're trying to do.
Oh, no. So it's not Herb or anything. This is just a colleague that I've asked to join us in the conversation today to give us a sense of what's happening in Barbados. What happened in Barbados is that due to the COVID pandemic, they had a shift in the way that they start the school day, and they're restricting general assemblies, and they now have new programming where students engage in activities in their classrooms. And a part of that new activity, one of those new activities is what they call like mindfulness training, where they give students an opportunity to talk about how they're dealing with the pandemic or to sit quietly in prayer, right? Or to sit quietly in thought, different from the general assembly format. So Ms. Heron isn't trying to do anything, and the Ministry of Education in Barbados, they're not trying to remove prayer or school, prayer or God or religion from schools. They're just trying to create a new dynamic that is safer in the midst of the pandemic, but also offers students different and possibly more effective tools to deal with their new and changing lives. There you go. All right. So, Bremen, thank you very much. And guess what? We are almost all out of time. I'd like to say thank you to my texters. Thank you to the callers. Ms. Heron, you want to leave us with a word?
I guess the only word I can leave with you is that the path of change is already there. So it's really just a matter of us to take advantage of the changes in the most positive way that we can, mm-hmm. Rather than, you know, because decolonization is a process, you know, and I think it should be fair to the government. What it is trying to do is to remove the historical imperial relationship of religion to the state, mm-hmm. and redefine it. And I think redefining it is going to take time. So we should allow ourselves to be a part of that process and give space for new opportunities and give space for a more inclusive approach to God, to the Creator, to the Goddess, to the Almighty One, to Allah, or whatever we call the source.
Yes. You know? Yes. Yeah. So thank you very much. Mark, thank you for joining.
You're very welcome.
We'll see you next week. We're going to look for another hot topic. Mm-hmm. It's world news, but, you know, everything seems to come right back to home, and I love it. Also, Ms. Heron, what do y'all have going on in Barbados? I'm reading about this event hosted by a local human rights organization. It was a webinar, and it was called Freedom of Thought in Our Republic and Beyond. No monarch, no master, no God. What type of exciting and controversial discussions y'all be having in Barbados?
I don't know. I'm going to take a listen and find out myself. Okay. I don't know about it. The no God to me sounds like another fear-mongering tactic. You know, if it was such a situation, I wouldn't still have to be participating in meetings where the first item on the agenda is prayer.
Look here, you must be holding all your meetings in the Bahamas. Look at that, dear sisters, once again. Anyway, I'm all out of time. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, too. You take care. Good to meet you, Mark.
Yeah, you take care.
Absolutely. Have a great day, Bahamas. And stay tuned for Guardian Radio AM with Quincy Parker coming up next. Have a great day, Bahamas.